Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Another edition of the Juice on the Cuse podcast here. Wes Chang with Matt D'Agostino. And Wes, I can tell by the many leather-bound books behind you in your screen that, I know you are a literary wizard. So I don't think I need to remind you to beware the Ides of March today on March 15th. and normally, we like to look at this point in the Syracuse season as, you know, don't underestimate your opponent as you're looking ahead to the NCAA tournament or whether it be your conference tournament. However, we sit here on a Friday morning and the Orange do not have any Ides of March to beware of because the conference tournament, their NCAA tournament hopes dashed on Tuesday, or was it Wednesday? And the Syracuse Orange falling to NC State 83-65 in their first ACC tournament game, the second round of the tournament. And I got to believe at this point, any hope Syracuse had of making the field of 68 were dashed earlier this week.
Yeah, that dream is completely over, Matt. And it's really hard to beat a team three times in a season. And it wasn't like Syracuse routed NC State in their home-and-home series in the regular season. You know, Syracuse beat them by an average of 8 points. So, you know, the Wolfpack was really wanting to get in for that rematch. And Syracuse did themselves no favors. 19 turnovers leading to 30 NC State points. Syracuse really couldn't do anything to stop DJ Horn during that key 21-4 run. That put NC State up 58-43. The game was pretty much over at that point. And I'll add this, you know, Syracuse only took 6 free throws as a team the entire game. NC State taking 24. This is not the Judah Mintz kind of game. I know Judah Mintz scored 21 points, but he took 21 shots to get there, only got to the line 4 times. So for Syracuse to really be successful, they really have to be getting calls when he drives into the lane. They didn't get that, especially in the second half, and that's really what led to the loss.
Yeah, a couple things. The 6 free throws, less than Judah averages on the season by himself, so that's uncharacteristic. Usually it's Syracuse's defense forcing the turnovers and scoring points off of them. That was not as much the case. And the fouls you mentioned, it was even frustrating. Judah Mintz, who got teed up for arguing a second time. He had to be held back earlier in the game by Quadir Copeland after he is approaching an official to complain about a call, but then blatantly right in front of the ref yelling at him after he gets hit in the eye and gets teed up. So it was kind of frustration boiling over throughout the game. But like you said, 58-43 with 12 and a half to play after NC State goes on a 21-4 run. That kind of spelled disaster for Syracuse. So one and done in the ACC tournament this year for Syracuse. And on what was otherwise a bright, encouraging season, ends on a sour note here. We'll see where they go from there. But Wes, since coming to the ACC, the conference tournament has not been Syracuse's friend.
No, it hasn't been. And, you know, our Brad Bierman does a great job of breaking down Syracuse's, quite frankly, terrible history in the ACC tournament. 2014, 16, 17, and now 2023, they were playing their mandatory one game and out. And the farthest they've gone is the quarterfinals in 14, 19, 20, 21, and 22. You know, they haven't even gotten into the semis, which says a lot about the success or lack thereof they had in the ACC tournament. You know, that 21 team was probably the closest opportunity they've had. They lost to Virginia in the quarterfinals, 72-69. You have to think part of the reason, and I want to get your take on this, Matt, is why they've never done well as opposed to the Big East tournament, which they won, you know, five or six times in Jim Boeheim's tenure, is aside from where the tournament rotates, you know, it does rotate through Brooklyn, but most of the time it's an away game. And I know Syracuse fans always travel well, but Madison Square Garden, in my opinion, gives Syracuse an advantage with all the alumni down there, even as opposed to Washington, D.C., which is where it was hosted this year. And of course, they've always, you know, entered as a middling seed, except for the first couple seasons in the ACC, which is also part of the reasons for the struggles. But, you know, even some of these early exits, they're losing to teams that are seeded below them, including this year to NC State.
Yeah, certainly the Garden brings a certain aura to Syracuse. It's clear that it brings a certain level of energy to the team. It brings a certain level of energy to the coaching staff. And it's weird. Syracuse played NC State on the anniversary of the 6 overtime game. And you think back to that and all of the cool stories we get out of the Big East tournament days. And there have not been any of those kinds of moments in the ACC tournament. Location, I'm sure, has something to do with it. If you look at the rosters Syracuse has fielded since being in the ACC, they're not to the level of the Dukes and the Carolinas in recent years that we're typically seeing, where in the Big East, more times than not, they were one of the top four teams in that conference. So there was a talent level, I would say, that existed during the Big East days that maybe hasn't existed as much in the ACC days. But it's alarming a little bit because, you know, a lot of teams are using the ACC tournament or their conference tournament to bolster
launching pads.
Say that again?
Launching pads.
Correct. Bolster their resume, get a little momentum going into the tournament the following week. And Syracuse has had to use it as a last ditch effort to make a push to get in as a 10 seed or an 11 seed or something along those lines. And I'm sure there's a mental factor that goes into that, as, you know, we're in the tournament. Here's what we need to do in our conference tournament to kind of get everything lined up for the NCAA tournament. And the last few years, they've been looking at the ACC tournament like, holy cow, we've got to make some noise in this or else we're done. And that is a very different way to enter a conference tournament, it feels like.
Yeah, I agree, Matt. But, you know, we can look forward maybe toward next season where they won't have to struggle in the ACC tournament to even build up their NCAA resume. Matt, I'm going to start this segment off by just saying that the Post Standard's Donna Ditota speaking with Malik Brown, and he's confirming that he's coming back for the 2024-25 season. ACC all defensive team selection this year. And more importantly, I've named him to the all Josh Pace team. Huge piece of the puzzle. And
so Syracuse big on that roster. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. And you know, Syracuse needs more size, especially with Benny Williams gone, and they're adding McDonald's all American power forward Donnie Freeman, as we mentioned before. And the other thing that Syracuse has lacked all season long is a second shooter to go alongside Chris Bell. You know, Justin Taylor just hasn't been that second shooter that they've needed. And how about Elijah Moore dropping 67 points in a high school game last week? So curious to see if Copeland, Bell, and Starling all return. I think they do. They seem pretty happy in their roles. Maybe Bell, you know, can be a little upset at times, but, you know, I think he's really rounded into a very consistent shooter. And that's a good core moving forward. You know, I think they need a potential transfer to replace Judah Mintz at point guard. An established center would certainly help, but I actually think Syracuse is in pretty good shape heading into next season.
Yeah, no big deal, Elijah Moore. I probably had around 67 points in my high school career. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. Yeah, good start by having Malik Brown saying he's coming back. That's one less worry for Syracuse's coaching staff and the roster. Like you said, I mean, I was reading tweets after the loss the other day, and you know, people are going off the deep end with everything going on. But one guy said, you could conceivably have Judah Mintz gone, Kyle Cuff gone, Hema gone, Peter Carey gone, Justin Taylor gone. That's a handful of guys that may not be on this roster next year. And you can say what you want about how you feel that contributes to it, but there's going to be more rebuilding, as there seems to be year in and year out at every college program, not just due to the.
Yeah, it's not just Syracuse, right? Like, correct. You know, absolutely. Syracuse is in the same, but you saw the roster turnover that the Blue Bloods, like Duke and UNC. UNC lost, I think, 75% of their roster from last year. They're fine this year. They're easily in the NCAA tournament. They've been a top 10 team all year.
Right. I will be interested to see. Obviously, Judah Mintz is the linchpin for all of this, in my opinion, of the guys who I think you got it right with Bell and with other guys that probably will be staying at Syracuse. I think how do you replace Judah Mintz if he does go to the draft or does transfer will be the biggest piece of the puzzle that they need to figure out in the offseason. It's encouraging, you know, that maybe next year at this time, we're not talking about what do they need to do to get in. It's what do they need to do to solidify a seed in the tournament. This does seem like to use a term you just used a minute ago, a launching pad type season for the program to kind of get them back to national prominence. The name is still there. People still remember the name. But the performance has not been there for those in Syracuse jerseys the last few years.
Yeah, but, you know, again, 20-win season for Adrian Autry's first year. Again, I mentioned this before, not with his roster, with a team that was recruited to play a very different style of defense. I think you give him a lot of credit, especially with a lot of the turmoil happening this season. Again, he didn't have Chance Westry. He was missing Naheem McLeod for most of the year, and then Benny Williams getting dismissed, showing a lot of internal turmoil. He still guides in the 20 regular season wins. I still think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I would not have bet on that happening at the beginning of the season. And it leads right into this, Wesley, because I know how much you love that I love betting. And I love betting against my friends, you included, betting on anything, really, sports games, who's faster, and the betting app Kutt, K-U-T-T, allows me to do just that. The Kutt app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states. It has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. Kutt accepts all payments, no need for Venmo. And, you know, Wes, we may have to see what the odds are for the NIT. Where Syracuse stands in that regard to place any sort of bets on Syracuse basketball here in the near future. And if you want to do that on Kutt, use the promo code BELEAVECUSE, BLEAVCUSE. That's the Believe Network. And of course, Syracuse, BELEAVECUSE for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code to BELEAVECUSE and Kutt, K-U-T-T. Put your money where your mouth is. Jim Steck-Schulte will join us when we come back here on the Juice and the Q's podcast, talking possible NIT implications for this Syracuse team. Back here on the Juice and the Q's podcast, Matt D'Agostino with Wes Chang, and we are now joined by Juice Online Rivals contributor Jim Steck-Schulte. And Jim, we know you've been doing a little research here on the NIT. Unfortunately, we have to talk about this instead of the NCAA tournament. But as somebody who will not pay attention to the NIT until it's time to, if necessary, I'm getting into that mode now, and you're telling me there's a different way they are selecting the teams for the NIT this season. What are the changes in that selection process?
Well, basically the old way, it showed respect to smaller schools is probably the bluntest way to say it, because any team that won their conference regular season and did not win their conference postseason tournament to get that auto bid in the NCAA, they were automatically granted a bid to the NIT. So like Toledo from the MAC this year or Richmond from the A-10 who lost yesterday, those two teams would be automatically into the NIT. That's not how it is anymore. it's now there's 32 teams still. 12 bids go to the top two teams in NET from each of the six power conferences. So whoever, you know, so like if Wake Forest doesn't get in the NCAA tournament, they will get one of the ACC two automatic bids. And, you know, so each of those six power conferences will have, that's how, where the top 12 teams will come from. And all 12 of those teams will host a first round game. So which would leave four other at-larges, you know, hosting a first round game. So I think that's the big thing about how Syracuse's chances are. I think a part of Syracuse's chances comes from those rules, because now that they've kind of pushed back towards favoring big schools from the power conferences, I think that's one way Syracuse might have a little more help getting in the NIT this year, as opposed to under the previous set of qualifications that were used.
Okay, Jim, so you've crunched the numbers, you've taken a look at some of the schools, especially under these new rules. Is Syracuse safely in, or are they going to even have to be, you know, bubble watching even on Selection Sunday for the NIT?
I can't say they're safely in. They're still going to be bubble watching for the NIT. When you look at the net ratings for just the ACC, they're out of the teams who are not going to be in the NCAA tournament. They're behind Boston College. They're behind NC State, whose only chance is winning the conference tournament. They're behind Wake, who is maybe not, but they're also behind like Virginia Tech. So I think, sadly, Syracuse's best chance is because they're a brand name school from a power conference. I think it's completely related to that, getting back to what I said about how the rules now are to benefit the power conference teams by giving those auto berths and kind of pushing some of the small schools away. I think the reason for that is because they want a TV audience for these games, and it's easier to get a TV audience when Syracuse is playing another, you know, I don't know, like if Indiana doesn't make it, or another big name school that's having a slightly down year. Like if Ohio State doesn't make it, Syracuse, Ohio State sounds a lot better than, to use the two teams I mentioned before, Richmond and Toledo. And that's it's not a slight against those guys, those schools, those players, those coaches, none of it. I just think part of it is building up a TV audience for the game.
So you're telling me it's still a business after all of this, huh? Interesting.
I do not mean to shock you. You may need to go back to bed after and ruminate on this after this revealing expose I've just given you. But yes, I do think that a lot of it is about driving and more the TV audience than even like getting 12,000 people into an arena. So I think it's like all those bowl games the last 2 weeks of December for college football. I think it's just a money driven situation.
This is more of an opinion question, I guess, Jim. We hear coaches say it all the time, and Coach Autry said it the other night after the loss, that any chance that they have to play more games is a welcome thing for them. Football coaches say the same thing about bowl games that have no bearing on anything in the final standings or whatever. I've always found it hard to get up for the NIT as a fan. Do you think that's a personal opinion that you share, or more of a widespread opinion? Or should we be looking at this like, this team is all sophomores, they need the game experience as much as they can get it, and we should be happy about an NIT bid should Syracuse get in?
Well, considering that no player on this roster has played in a game that was a postseason game that didn't start with the phrase ACC, I think they should play. And honestly, if they don't get an NIT bid and like the CBI wants them, please, because I mean, it's not going to hurt. But like the only way it hurts is if someone has a significant injury that affects their ability to be ready for the start of next season. When you watch them play, there are the holes there. There are holes everywhere. If you want to ruin someone's life and have a Brutal Truth podcast about how the season really went, I'd be happy to guess for that and be the bad guy. But I think they should play, because as you said, it's a young team. And like I said, no one has ever played a postseason game that wasn't a conference tournament game on this roster. These guys need to keep playing and playing together, because they need to keep working to figure it out, if not just for a 2 or 3 game run in the NIT this year or whatever, but just it's going to help for next year. Because I mean, I can't imagine there will be so much roster turnover where having the 8 guys who play there won't be anything good to come from that because they are all going to go elsewhere. And I can't see most of those guys leaving for some reason.
Well, that's a kind of good segue into our last question for you, Jim, which is, you know, there always is roster turnover. I think at least for some of these guys, whether it's Judah Mintz moving on to the NBA or, you know, the portal, which I think surprised us all the time with people leaving, not only in football, but also in basketball. And in this case, so if you had to cobble together other pieces from other rosters, you know, on top of Elijah Moore and Donnie Freeman coming in, what ideal things would you like to get? And I think in this situation, you have to assume that Judah Mintz is not going to be back. So take that into account, take all these, you know, the two incoming freshmen, what else does Syracuse need heading into the 2024-25 season?
A starting point guard who's passed first would be my absolute first thing on the list. And this is not a swipe at Judah Mintz in any way. He has played well this year. He has improved his passing as evidence, and it's evidenced by the numbers. Just his assists have gone up this year. But I think having a guy who has the ball in his hands so much, who is not so heavily, I mean, and it's not to say that he shouldn't use his abilities to score and draw fouls and get to the line and all that stuff. But I think in the history, and because we can look back through Boeheim's years, because they run the same offense they ran under Boeheim, they do it under Autry. It's not any different. It is basically guys are supposed to know the shots that they're supposed to take because they're the shots that they can make. So they work within their own skill sets and what they do. And even a Chris Bell, like most of his 3-point shots come in that stationary corners or the breaks on the sides. And not dribbling into threes and not a whole lot of movement. So I think it's because that's where he's most comfortable shooting the 3-point shot. And we've seen it kind of come. He's had a couple more shots later in the year where he's been like moving off a curl and, you know, into like what looks, you know, and gets it delivered where it's a catch and shoot kind of thing. So I can see that. And that kind of carries on to other guys on the roster. Like you see, like as Starlin got more comfortable with his 3-point shot, he was shooting more threes than he did early in the season when he was still struggling. And it carries on through other guys, like what they can do reflects how they play. So a point like the Syracuse offense has historically run better when they've had a point guard who can score, but also is a little more focused on helping set his teammates up. Cause you can look through the guys, like no one's ever going to say that like Sherman Douglas couldn't score or Jerry McNamara couldn't score or Johnny Flynn couldn't score and on. But these guys all placed more of a premium on setting up their teammates and helping the team offense succeed, as opposed to like, I've got to put this offense on my back and, you know, do it all kind of, it almost feels like, because like you see these line scores where like Judah Mintz has 21 field goal attempts, but also goes to line 8 or 9 times. Well, that means he probably actually shot the ball 25 times in the game. And so it's just kind of, finding a little more of that helping guys, helping my teammates score as well as getting my own. That kind of guard that, you know, it's very rare that we've had a lead guard who's like a Frank Howard, who's not really, even on those teams where they were offensively challenged, and he was one of the three guys who was taking the lion's share of shots, he was still putting up good assist numbers because he was looking for a Tyus battle or, you know, another teammate. And he wasn't always like, didn't seem like it was so much, I need to shoot the ball for us to score.
Well, we will see what happens with the college basketball version of free agency here in a few weeks when the transfer portal kicks off and what Syracuse can retain of its roster and where they go to get others to supplement next year's team. Jim, we appreciate the time and we'll see where Syracuse ends up if they do get that NIT bid. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Juice on the Cues podcast. Wes Chang alongside Matt D'Agostino. Matt, want to give a closing thought on Mike Hopkins. He's now out of the job after being fired by the Washington Huskies
after seven seasons, a 118-106 overall record, and, you know, kind of a disappointing 60-72 in the Pac-12. It's also disappointing because he started so well, 21-13 in his first season, 27-9 in his second season. And at that point, you think this is going to be a West Coast dynasty in the making, especially given that he was Pac-12 Coach of the Year. That turns out to be the last good season he has, 15-7, and then 5-21 in the two seasons after. So he goes 17-15 this season. I think what you weigh what happens with Hopkins at UW, and then you see the job Adrian Autry did in his first season, Syracuse winning those 20 games, as we discussed earlier. It seems like Syracuse is in the better spot, you know, in terms of, you know, the coach that they ended up with in the post-Boeheim year. I don't know if you agree with that, Matt.
I think so, and I'm not sure I would have said that prior to Hopkins taking the Washington job. I think a lot of us, myself included, were really excited at the thought of Hopkins being Syracuse's coach. To me, I don't know what he has planned for the next stop in his career, whether it's still a job in the college ranks or whether he goes pro with his coaching. I've always thought he was the epitome of a college coach in terms of the dude knows how to connect to 18 to 22 year olds. Not that he was trying to recruit me when I went to the Syracuse summer camp in ninth grade, but you got to see him interact with kids our age. And he was the star of the show. Let's put it this way. Coach Boeheim was kind of just behind the scenes. He came out every once in a while, but it was the assistant coaches. It was the players that were really interacting with the kids a lot of the time. And he was dynamic. And I think we saw that as an assistant coach. He was great at recruiting. He had a way of reaching the players in a way that Coach Boeheim could not. And some of these other assistants could not. So the first thought when you see he's gone at Washington is, I wonder if he would ever come back to Syracuse. And I don't know the answer to that question, but I think while Adrian Autry seems the better fit, certainly for the head coach, I do think there's a way to welcome back a familiar face if he was interested and if the school was interested in it. I feel like he could still be an asset to the program if he decided to.
Yeah, I just don't see Syracuse hiring him back just because the coaching staff is set with McNamara now as the associate head coach. And I think Hopkins wants to move on with his career. I could see him as a great MBA assistant or dropping down to kind of that group of five level where he's just, you know, a head coach of maybe a lower program, but can, again, recruit really well and get some of those assets in. One of the things is that it's hard to recruit from the West Coast when all of your ties for that entire coaching period have really been on the East Coast. And I think that really hurt him in his recruiting. And then once the record didn't match what he wanted to actually sell, I actually think that was a huge problem for him as well. And that led to his downfall. Recruiting is the lifeline of any program. And if you can't recruit the West Coast like he did the East Coast, you know, initially that 27-win season was based on players that he had actually recruited from Syracuse and got them there, like a guy like an Isaiah Stewart or Kwadi Green, who he had actually met as an assistant at Syracuse, and he brought them over to UW, but he didn't have that continual momentum after he had really had a couple of years under him at UW.
Well, if he's got New Jersey ties at all, maybe he could be a recruiter for the football program. What do you say about that? Maybe not. Sad to see it. Mike Hopkins, great guy, like great person, great coach. Sad to see his run come to the end, but fifth most wins in Washington's program's history. So, notable there as Mike Hopkins is out as the head coach at the University of Washington. Wes, well done once again. I will not say a tu brute to end the Ides of March podcast. I will say enjoy your weekend. To all you listening out there on the Believe Network and on Rivals, enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.